From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made with the release of some of the biggest budget movies of 2021. Dune, The Matrix 4. Warner Media is hoping that they will be blockbusters. But Warner Media is also making plans to ensure these films reach viewers, even if those viewers don't want to go to a movie theater anytime soon. Last week, Warner Media announced a massive shift in the movie industry. Yes, the company will release new films in theaters, including Wonder Woman 1984, Space Jam 2, but Warner Media will also release these films on HBO Max at the same time. Each movie would stream on that platform for 1 month before being removed. Schools have hybrid models, and now so do movie studios. Warner Media calls it, quote, a strategic response to the impact of the ongoing global pandemic, end quote. But right away, critics called it a misguided move. And worse, writing for The Atlantic, culture writer David Sims called the move a sign of panic that will kill movie theaters. Sims writes, quote, Warner Media's decision to put all of its 2021 films on HBO Max is a short-sighted decision that will have major repercussions for Hollywood. This will be disastrous for theaters. Audiences will have little incentive to pay more to see these films in theaters, even if pandemic restrictions permit, creating a new set of consumer expectations that will be hard to undo. Theater chains are right to fear for their survival, and Warner Media's move, which seems more motivated by panic than a desire for long-term success, is a risky bet for studios too, end quote. Consider what Sims is saying here. He's saying that the pandemic could permanently shift how we expect to watch movies, even long after vaccines. The cost could be enormous, but he concludes with this idea, and I tend to share this one, quote, the main variable that remains impossible to predict in all of this is human behavior. People in the United States have been cooped up at home for much of 2020 and will continue to live pandemic-limited lives for much or part of 2021. Once a vaccine is widely distributed, a pent-up desire to return to normalcy could be unleashed. I certainly crave the collective experience of movie watching. I'm sure I'm not the only one sick of seeing things from my couch, end quote. But will that be enough to save movie theaters? Will it be different for independent movie theaters as opposed to chains? And will other film studios follow Warner Media? Our guests have a lot to say about this, and they include our colleague Derek Rees, general manager and film programmer for The Little Theater. Derek, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Evan. Thanks for having me.
And I appreciate the time of Jeff Goldman, who's with us. Jeff is with Mini Theaters Bookings, and I know works with The Little as well. Jeff, thanks for making time for the program.
Thank you, Evan. Thank you for having me as well.
And Adam Lubiteau is the film critic for City News. Adam, it's always nice to have you. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Evan. Yeah, thanks for the invitation. I'm excited to talk about this fascinating subject.
Yeah, fascinating is one word for it. Hey, Adam, last
I chose that carefully.
Last movie I saw in the theater was Jojo Rabbit at the Little, one of the best movies I think I've ever seen, which, by the way, listeners, please watch that movie if you haven't. And, of course, seeing it in The Little was awesome. It always is. I had no idea at the time that'd be the last movie I see for a while in the theater. What about you? What's the last movie you saw in a theater, Adam?
It's weird because I think the last movie I saw in a theater was also The Little, but it was a press screening for the movie First Cow, a movie that, since the theater shut down, never actually opened, and I didn't even run a review of it because it never played here.
Wow. And by the way, just in the interest of transparency, listeners are probably aware that, yes, WXXI has a relationship with The Little, and we are proud of that, and I am proud of their work, and I find them to be an institution. But if you want to take anything I say at a discount because of that, feel free. It'd be a mistake because The Little is great. Okay. Derek, for you, let me start with you as we look at sort of the broad landscape here. This decision by Warner Media, what was your first thought when you heard about this?
Well, at first I was disappointed and shocked a little bit, but nothing seems shocking in 2020 anymore. And then I thought to myself, some of these films, or majority of these films from Warner Brothers specifically, we wouldn't have carried.
Yeah.
But exactly. there's a couple on there that we would plan on. But overall, if you count them as 12 films or whatever, maybe 2 to 3 we might carry. But then I thought of the broader implications. I mean, it's like if other distributing companies start to think this is the way to go, it could trickle down to not good news for us. we, being an independent theater, we have a little bit more flexibility than some of the chains. We were kind of leading up to this mission anyways to do other things than movies. That's the reason why we renovated Theater One. We have a stage, music. But I think as the movie business, this is obviously a scary time to think that others might do this. So I'm not happy by it.
Yeah, and Derek, I also want to ask you, before I ask our other guests that same question, is there any reason to think that this decision by Warner Media, if it is sort of a one-off, or if maybe big studios do this but we don't often see others do this, could this harm sort of the theater chains but actually benefit independent theaters, because the movie-going audiences may not have the big theaters in the same numbers, and they might feel like, you know, the little is the option now, or other theaters like it. Or am I being too optimistic? Or is the concern that you have that Warner Media's decision will spark others to do the same?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a slippery slope. It's a little bit of both. I think it could spark other distributors to think this way once they see kind of a fallout of it. And at the same time, it could help us with the smaller films. We tend to deal with the independent arms of these companies, Fox Searchlight, Sony Picture Classics, to name two. But they are owned by large companies, and they are under control of that, like Disney and Sony. So they could force it down the line, and then we would suffer ultimately. But like you said, to your point, it could push people to come here if we're carrying a certain product that is not out on streaming. It's definitely a slippery slope of uncertainty.
Jeff, before I ask you to kind of weigh in on what Warner Media is doing here, tell us a little bit about what you do at Mini Theaters Bookings.
I'm hired by people like Derek and anyone who has an independent theater to fight on their behalf with these large conglomerate film companies to get them the best deals, the quickest play times, and getting the film as earliest as possible.
How easy or difficult is that?
My job sucks. It's a very difficult job, and I'm fighting. I fight every single day.
That was not the answer I expected, Jeff, but that was very candid. That was very candid. So can you give me a sense then, you know, if you're fighting, for example, for the little theater, what is what is typically the process? Derek calls you, he says, we're looking at X film or Y film, and, you know, you go to bat, and, you know, take me through kind of what the process is like.
Yeah, so Derek will call up and say, hey, I want to play First Cow. Get it for me for April 2nd. That's when it opens in New York and L.A., and I'll call up IFC or Magnolia or Netflix, whoever it is, and I'll say, I'd like to play. And they'll tell me, not on that date. How about 2 weeks later? We want to go just New York and L.A. only. And it's a dance. They want me to go 6 weeks off. I want to go the same time, and we end up 2 weeks off, 1 week off, 3 weeks off. And then the terms, is it 50%, is it 40%, is it 35%? It's all negotiable. So everything is all negotiable.
I mean, I am so naive, Jeff. I would have thought that with the exception of premieres and some limited premieres, that these studios, when you call, would say, great, put our movie as far and wide as you can. Just put it on any screen, someone will take it. I guess it's not quite that way.
Well, you have to go through the film industry. Back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, Miramax did it best in the 90s, is they took a small film and they put it in just one or two theaters, let it build, let the want, the desire to build up, and then they moved it slowly around the country where they had advertising and marketing to back it up in specific areas. So they have this model that they keep using, even though we're in a digital age. The smaller companies like IFC and Magnolia, they still don't have the money for marketing, so they still kind of want to go from place to place, even though the $5 you spend on Facebook is everywhere, not just New York City anymore. They still live. They're still living in the past, a lot of these small companies. COVID is changing it. Focus has already said that they're going with the Universal model, which is 21 days, and then it goes to VOD. So it gives Derek, Universal Films and Focus Films, 21 days to play it before it goes on the VOD now. Mm. Warner Brothers is giving 0 days, and Disney is not even allowing us to play. Their film, Soul, is going right on Disney Plus, and they won't even let a person like Derek play it.
Wow. Yeah. Derek, how does Jeff do for you?
Oh, well, Jeff is great. He's new to our organization. Our former booker passed away last year.
Oh, man.
So we got Jeff out of assimilation, and I think the relationship's great. We just haven't had a lot of time to work together.
Well, yeah, and boy, who could have predicted the circumstances of 2020? So, Jeff, when you heard about what Warner Media is doing, which, again, listeners, if you're just joining us, they are going to release new films in theaters, but they're going to simultaneously release on the streaming service HBO Max for a set amount of time. So essentially allowing you to decide as we go forward, do I want to go to a theater to watch this film? Do I want to see it instantly on a streaming platform? What did you make of that, Jeff?
So originally when Warner Brothers approached me for the deal for Warner Brothers, they told me that it was a one-off film, that the Wonder Woman is going to go on HBO Max only. We're not talking about any other film. And I agreed to the terms and condition, provided it was only a one-off. The following day, within 24 hours, I got the phone call that said it's now going to be all of 21 films. And I said, the deal's off. I now want the same deal I get from Netflix or Amazon, which is a lot better, cheaper. You know, better for the theater owners in terms of terms, 35% instead of, 55%. It's 20% a lot of money difference. So I'm still fighting with Warner Brothers over the terms for Wonder Woman. They will not budge, and so far I have not budged. I've got 25 theaters sitting on the side waiting to advertise for Wonder Woman, but can't because I can't make a deal with them. They won't move back from their terms, and they're using original terms pre-COVID. For Wonder Woman, which is unfair because it's post-COVID.
Wow, and that's a Christmas release, is that correct?
Yes, 12/25.
Okay, I'll see with the Atlantic's contractor, Jeff, who is worried that what Warner Media is doing could contribute to killing movie theaters.
It could. I think, though, that between Disney, Universal, and Warner Brothers, one of those models is going to survive post-COVID. And I'm hoping, and I think it's going to be the Universal model, which says 21 to 50 days in a window for theaters, like they did with Croods and Let Him Go and Freaky these past couple of films. And I think post-COVID, that's the model that theater owners would accept and most studios would accept. But you got Disney, who refuses to even negotiate and wants to go directly, which would kill us. And Warner Brothers' model, if that one survives, would, I think, kill us as well.
Adam, as a film critic for City News, some of what we're going to talk about in our second half hour is how these developments could impact our expectations for how we see movies in the future. And we're going to touch on David Sims' point in The Atlantic, in which he said that if we all get used to seeing movies streaming right when they come out, you know, that every film that is released in a theater is also released on a streaming platform, that viewers may decide ultimately, I don't want to go pay a price to sit in a theater. I just want to get it streamed to home. I mean, I tend to think that maybe not, and we'll talk about that coming up here, because I think nothing beats the experience of a theater, especially, yes, like The Little. But we'll get back there in a moment. I want to ask you what you think of this decision in general, Adam, by Warner Media.
I feel like it's an interesting experiment. I'm not sure. I think it has the potential to change, how the theatrical business works from here on out. But also it may backfire. I know the way they rolled it out, it definitely feels like it was kind of out of desperation, because I don't know if you followed any of the kind of the fallout of this, that a lot of apparently people involved in the production of these movies weren't told of this decision. And so they're now up in arms because since they were, spent all their time on this film that they were expecting to get this huge release in theaters all over the country, and now it's just going to be dropped on a streaming service. And I think Legendary, one of the production companies for two of the bigger titles, Godzilla vs. Kong and Dune, is talking about possibly taking legal action against Warner Brothers. So I feel like how all this plays out is either way going to have an impact on how we view movies from here on out, but I think it'll depend on exactly that, on how this all plays out over the next few months and over the next year, possibly.
And I also want to ask you about the idea of going to theaters in general. And I want to read a little bit of what sociologist and journalist Zeynep Tufekci recently wrote about the viewing experience during COVID in movie theaters. And for a little bit of background about Zeynep Tufekci, she is as good as it gets for covering this pandemic. She is someone who is a sort of a data writer. She collects really, really good research and collates it. She understands sort of human behavior, but she's not a speculator. She's very much data-based. Back in the end of March, she was one of the first journalists to write a piece for the New York Times saying, we need to all be in masks all the time, and the data from Asia is convincing on this. She was right. She was ahead of it. She's been right about just about everything in this. And this is what she recently wrote in her newsletter about what we are now learning about transmission indoors. She writes, quote, "I have not found a single outbreak traced to a movie theater. Surely some must have happened, I used to think, since the virus was circulating in so many countries in February and March before the distancing and shutdowns occurred. But I don't know of any. And if I missed any, it's still not likely a large number. The absence of evidence of viral spread in movie theaters is probably not because of a lack of tracing. Everyone going to see the same movie is a memorable event. It's easier to trace than many other kinds of gatherings. Meanwhile, we have multiple choir outbreaks all over the world, but people don't face each other or talk much at a movie theater. We can't rule out future transmissions, and I'm not necessarily rushing back into theaters anytime soon, but I think we can use this as useful information," end quote. I found that to be fascinating, Adam, because so much of that full newsletter, if you read from Tufekci, actually looks at what we've seen in restaurants in Korea and the United States, airflow, when people are facing each other versus when people are turned away from one another. All of these factors are helping us understand better how the virus transmits, especially indoors. And for her to conclude that at least right now, we don't have a single outbreak traced to a movie theater is pretty convincing. And the reason is pretty convincing. People are not facing each other and they're mostly not talking. And look, I mean, I guess I'm not, people are going to think I'm a homer for the little theater, but I'm not going to mess around with data on this. I guess I find myself thinking I would rather go to a movie in a theater as long as there was significant spacing, as opposed to sitting in a crowded restaurant right now. What do you think, Adam?
It's interesting because I was trying to figure out and see if there had been any, you know, outbreaks attributed to movie theaters, and I hadn't found anything. So it's good to have that confirmed. I don't know. I mean, I am eager to get back to the theater, but I feel like as with so much of this pandemic, it comes down to the psychological aspect, like what feels safe as opposed to what is actually safe. Yeah. And every time I've talked to people about, like, are you ready to go back into a theater? Everyone has been like, absolutely not. And so I feel like it'll depend on if that barrier can be broken down, that people, you know, start to actually feel like it's safe as opposed to, you know, feeling the opposite, which is what I feel like people currently.
Yeah, I think that's such a smart observation, because sometimes it's the psychology of what feels safe. And I do think, Adam, that given what I'm reading from this particular journalist, what we know from the data and what we're seeing with vaccines, I think personally my mentality will be the moment we see most of the vulnerable population vaccinated, even before I'm vaccinated, I think I would feel differently. I really do. I think, and we're not that far away from that. I think all the data is pretty solid on this, and I think I would be ready to hit a theater pretty early into 2021, as long as vaccination is rolling out in vulnerable populations. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Derek Reese, how do you feel about that data, that information there?
Well, I think that data is fascinating. That has not been a publicized outbreak in movie theaters or attributed to. And whether or not we think this is positive news, as anybody can attest, at the little theater, there's many times, many of the screenings, you're in there with a group of 15 people spread out anyway. On any given night before COVID, I mean, trust me, I wish there was more people. That means more money for everybody. But the reality is there was many nights that there's two people in the theater on the late show. No more than 40 in the largest theater on a weekend. It's just the way it was going. So I think for them to have blanketly closed theaters was a mistake.
And I'm not trying to be sort of Pollyanna about this. I mean, I think Adam's point's a good one here. We have to be careful. We have to be safe. And the psychology matters.
Sure.
And it's difficult, especially in indoor settings. But I'm also, you know, listeners know that I'm very concerned about the long-term business impacts across industries. That's what we talked about yesterday. That's what we're going to keep talking about. And just realistically here, I find the data very, very interesting. What do you think, Jeff Goldman?
I agree totally with the data. I think that there's no correlation of going to a movie theater and getting it other than going anywhere else out to dinner or, you know, I think that sometimes we overreact. But then again, I have older people and I myself haven't been out of my house in 9 months to protect my 83-year-old father-in-law.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and that has to be first. And everyone's got a different situation. Maybe you live with an 83-year-old father-in-law, or maybe you live alone. And maybe, you know, everyone's got different sort of direct vectors and things to consider. And we all have to be thinking about just beyond ourselves. And that's important. But we're talking about the future of movie theaters, listeners. If you're just joining us, some interesting news from Warner Media last week. They announced that starting on Christmas with the release of Wonder Woman 1984 and with their 2021 slate of movies, including everything, I mean, the planned blockbusters, they will release these movies in theaters. They will concurrently release the movies on HBO Max, a streaming service, so you can start streaming those films the day they're released and you don't have to go to the theater. And there's some real concern about how that will impact the long-term health of theaters, and I'd love to hear from listeners on this. What do you think? How have you been consuming media? Have you been watching more or fewer movies? Do you miss the theater experience? It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994, or you can email the program connections@WXXI.org. Steven writes to say, Evan, my spouse and I are planning to get HBO Max specifically for the movies, and as a DC Comics fan, I definitely want to see Wonder Woman 84 on opening day. We are also very COVID conscious. We don't feel safe going out to theaters. Once the pandemic is over, I'll definitely be going back out to theaters. There is something about seeing a film on the big screen first versus being at home. I most certainly will be back at the movies when I can. I'm still kind of nervous about sitting for two or so hours inside with other people, even with distancing. Yeah, I take that point, Stephen. I mean, I'm not saying everybody go do something you're not comfortable with. I'm just saying the data is really interesting on this. And the more we learn, I think the more we should share. But I totally respect your feeling on this. I think Adam's making some good points. And I am hopeful that we are weeks, if not just a few months away from having lots and lots of people vaccinated, starting with the most vulnerable in the population here. So let me ask our guests about viewing habits here. Adam, you know, you're a film critic, so for City, so you obviously do a lot of your work, some of your work at least, seeing films because it's technically work. But in terms of just viewing for pleasure, have you found yourself watching more or fewer films, shows, et cetera, this year?
Like you said, yeah, since I'm a film critic, I feel like my viewing is skewed since I've still, you know, been watching for work. So I feel like it's about the same. But it's interesting this year with, you know, the bigger releases foregoing theaters, we've kind of had a peek at what things will be like without theaters and how that impacts the movies themselves. Because, you know, so many people I've talked to have said, you know, there haven't been any movies this year. But on the contrary, there have been so many movies being released on streaming platforms and on VOD, and it's not the big titles that, you know, might have had the marketing that people have heard of, but all the mid-size and independent films are still being released, and I feel like that's kind of the problem there. It's just become this kind of wave of content without the theater experience, with people seeing it and kind of building a word of mouth. It's just been this wave of content, and they all come and go without making any sort of impact, without having a chance to build and find their audience, which is a shame because there have been some great movies released this year, and I feel like they haven't made that impact and people haven't seen them. So that's why I still have faith that movie theaters will come back, possibly in a different form. I mean, they'll have to change things from how they've been operating, but it's seeing how this has played out over 2020 that kind of makes me feel hopeful.
Well, before,
in a weird way.
Yeah, before I get the other guests, let me grab Mika and Webster on the phone first to kind of weigh in on what the theaters have felt like. Go ahead, Mika.
Hi, yeah, I just wanted to say I went to the AMC in Webster last week, and my husband and I were tentative, but we got there, and there were only six people in the whole theater, so there were basically three groups of two people each, and we were all at least 30 feet apart from each other. And I have to say, I felt safer there than I feel just shopping at Wegmans.
Interesting. Yeah. Did you, were you masked up during the film?
Yeah, we were masked, although they do sell concessions. And so, you know, people take off their masks and stuff to eat and drink. But yeah, you're right. There's no talking. You know, we felt a little tentative about it, but we thought, well, the worst case scenario, like we walk in there, we don't feel safe and we leave.
Mm-hmm.
So we went in. It was worth it to us because we just haven't, you know, everyone's getting a little stir crazy these days. But honestly, it was like a better date night than going to a restaurant because you're way farther away from people. And also you have to book your seats in advance. But what you can do is, you know, once everybody gets in there, like if you feel a little too close, you could probably just scooch over a couple seats. And there's plenty of space. And so I'm not going to say that's the case at every theater, but at least where we went, we felt really safe.
Yeah. Date nights during COVID are hard, aren't they?
Yes. It's even hard to find a babysitter because you have to vet the babysitter,
absolutely,
too.
Absolutely.
You know, it's difficult.
Well, I'm glad to get the perspective. Thank you, Mika. I appreciate the phone call. Derek, as the general manager and film programmer for The Little, brief aside here. The Little is made for date nights, but that's a separate thing. Derek, when she points out there were six people in the theater and it felt safer than Wegmans, I am both certainly happy for Mika that for her it was a good experience. It felt safe. But at the same time, I'm thinking of restaurants that have to open at 25 or 50% capacity and they could barely break even. I mean, what's break even if The Little or other theaters are allowed to be open, but you can only have... 25 people in a theater? I mean, like, what is a point where you go, this is not worth it to us, we're losing money anyway?
No, correct. As soon as, like Mika said, that there were six people, I was like, oh my God, that's great that she enjoyed the experience. But in terms of revenue, that's terrible. I mean, a theater cannot survive with six people, 10 people. I mean, right now, we are all socially distanced and ready to open since all the dates came out and they kept getting pushed. One of our theaters, which normally would seat 170 people, now seats 40. So that's not even going to, you consider senior citizen discounts, you consider student discounts, you consider freebies, you consider all those different price points, we, 40 people is not gonna pay the bills, even if it's, you know, three theaters playing to 40 people at a time. You know, I mean, it's just not... And again, I'm all for health and safety, of course. That's my number one priority. But as someone who's trying to run a business, those numbers of people returning are dismal.
Yeah. Are you thinking, Derek, I'm just sort of thinking out loud here, knowing that the first vaccinations could happen literally this weekend in New York State. The first vaccinations in England started yesterday or the day before. And we're going to see a winter vaccination program that starts with the most vulnerable. We're going to move into the spring, I think, in a very different place. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say, I think we're going to have festivals this year. I think 2021 is going to feel much more normal-ish than 2020. I'm a big optimist. And are you seeing anybody, for example, like buying Little Theater gift cards or whatever? I'm sure you do gift certificates or gift cards. I don't know. I would assume you do.
Sure.
Are people like doing that for holiday gifts, saying, hey, look, even if we can't go now, vaccines are coming, life's coming back, this is a date night plan for the future, this is when life... Are people doing that? Are people thinking ahead, I'm going to get back? Or are you feeling like it's kind of dry right now?
Oh, it's very dry right now. Normally, I'm not going to give the exact numbers, but normally right at this point, in the December holiday timeframe, we would have sold thousands of dollars worth of gift certificates and some sort of pass, whether it's for popcorn or snacks, something in, you know, thousands of dollars. As of right now, without giving too much away, we've sold 10, maybe 5% of that.
Yeah,
it's very sad. People, I mean, I understand money is tight. People are struggling individually and through business. But the writing is on the wall. People are not buying gift certificates and all those things that they were in the numbers normally.
Well, and let me just kind of follow that point. You can look at what people buy in terms of gift cards, gift certificates on a typical holiday season. Yesterday on this program, Derek, we had Kevin McCann from McCann's Local Meats. He said that back in the spring when the pandemic hit, there was a real sentiment of buying local, supporting local, buying gift cards, buying gift certificates, finding a way to support the institutions you loved if you couldn't go there. And he said that sentiment is mostly gone right now. Do you agree with that?
On the gift certificate level, I agree with that. But in terms of membership and support, because we are membership driven, it's almost as strong as it ever was. People are giving and joining that way of showing their support.
That's great.
Which is great. Yep. But we are missing that revenue stream of gift certificates this time of year. Yep.
All right, let me ask both you and Jeff one more question on this. Then we're going to take a break and we're going to come back. We got a lot of feedback. We're going to talk about viewing habits and expectations for the future as we all consume movies. Derek, when people are watching on streaming services this year, understandably so, does that feel like do you feel like they're personally insulting you when they do that? Do you watch anything on streaming services? Is it okay with you?
Oh, of course. I don't understand it. I mean, I barely ever watched a movie on streaming. Maybe something I've seen 100 times I'll rewatch. But if it's a newer movie, I am definitely about the theater experience, the emotions you feel. I have to have that in my life. I can't sit on the couch and get distracted by the microwave going off or the doorbell ringing or whatever it is, even pre-COVID, being distracted. I need to be immersed in the theater experience. So it's not offensive, but I understand, like, of course.
Okay. Derek, by the way, just mentioned getting distracted by the doorbell ringing, which, as if anybody comes to the door anymore. I delivered
really
cookies in my neighborhood recently, and people look at you if you ring the doorbell like, should I call the police first? Is there a scheduled visitor? It's a different thing. I mean, it's not like it was in 2003 in England when, you know, a couple might be watching a movie and the doorbell rings and it's, you know, the husband's best friend telling his wife that he's in love with her via ridiculous cue cards, which might be the worst movie scene of all time. Maybe just for fun, we should do worst movie scenes, worst Christmas movies, worst Christmas scenes of all time. That Love Actually scene has to be the creepiest and worst of all time. That's a whole separate thing. I'll let Adam tell me if I'm right or wrong on that. Jeff Goldman, do you have any problem with streaming services? Do they bother you?
Yeah, I can't seem to watch a full movie at home. It's difficult. They're now letting me see these movies like the critics early. They have to show them to me as a film buyer. And I find that I turn them on for 15 minutes and turn them off and turn them on, and I don't get the continuity you get in a movie theater. I miss the theater.
Yeah, I hear that. Okay, Adam, real quick, was I right or wrong? Is that the creepiest scene of all time, that Love Actually scene?
I mean, it's up there.
It's terrible, right? It's just awful, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. I just want to make sure I'm not crazy. Listeners will tell me I'm wrong. I actually kind of like the whole I like the movie as a whole. That whole plot line is totally disturbing. So people are going to email me. Go ahead, bring it. Let's have a whole other separate show on it. We're going to come back in just a moment, and I've got some emails, interesting stuff to read from listeners as we talk about movie experiences in the future and whether this decision from Warner Media to put their 2021 releases, starting on Christmas, by the way, with Wonder Woman, both in the theaters and on streaming services at the same time, whether that's going to change your expectations, whether that's going to make you say in the future, no, I'm just used to seeing everything on the day it comes out on a streaming service. That's how I want to do it. I don't want to go to a theater. That's what The Atlantic's David Sims is concerned about. But I'm not so sure, and we've got some feedback to that effect. We'll take that, and we'll take a lot more of your comments on other subjects related to the movie experience during the pandemic with Derek Reese, general manager and film programmer for The Little Theater. Adam Lubitow is film critic for City News, and Jeff Goldman of Many Theaters Bookings is joining us as well. We're right back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, the National Women's Hall of Fame is posthumously inducting 6 black women of great achievement to the hall. They include Aretha Franklin, Barbara Hillary, Henrietta Lacks, and more. We'll tell you all about it and how you can attend. And then, in our second hour, Hanukkah Lights is back. A national celebration, and happy Hanukkah if you celebrate. We'll talk with you Thursday on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Barb in Wheatland writes to us, "Many people I've spoken with are looking forward to getting back into a theater for the large screen and the experience of watching a movie with a group of people, and that won't change in the future. For the short term, to help the brick-and-mortar buildings with their monthly expenses, Possibly theaters could push sales of gift cards with a bonus that if you purchase during the current closures, you could receive a free small popcorn or a drink with no expiration date on the gift cards. Hey, every idea, I'm sure, is welcome. But I think every theater, it sounds like, would love for you to buy gift cards and say to the recipient, we're going in the future, whether that's in January, February, March, June, next December, whenever. Derek, I would probably be confident putting you in that camp here. Gift cards available now?
Oh, yeah, little.org. We selling gift certificates, dinner and a movie. We have popcorn this weekend, curbside. We're doing all those things. Little.org is how you find out the information.
And I'm sure other theaters as well, just so I'm not a homer, I'm sure everyone would love to hear from you and love to have your help there. Thank you for that nice email there from Barb in Wheatland. This is from Jillian in Irondequoit. She says, when Tinseltown reopened, I was sure I would go. Movies are a main staple in my life, and I have mourned their closing. I can't seem to watch movies on TV. The theater experience is a whole different thing. I'm a high-risk person who lives alone. With the vaccine a few months off, I've decided to wait because of the steep increase in COVID cases. I am, however, very worried about the health of the whole business. It doesn't seem that they are getting help from the feds. That's from Jillian. And first of all, Jillian, good luck to you. Thank you for the email. She's a somewhat frequent emailer, and she's always thoughtful, and I'm grateful for that. And I'm thinking of listeners like Jillian. I'm thinking of listeners like my mother and so many others who are in high-risk categories who I hope are feeling that we're getting there, that we are weeks or maybe just a month or two away from really seeing big, big progress in the vulnerable population. So I certainly understand, Jillian, why you would say right now, you know, I miss the theater, but I'm going to wait. I get that. But she's also saying, how come they're not getting help from the federal government? Well, Derek, maybe Derek and Jeff can address this one. I'll start with Derek. You know, we think about restaurants, bars, we think about movie theaters. And when the government says you've got to close or you've got to be mostly closed or your capacity is limited, I said yesterday, I don't understand how the government can say you can't do your business, but we're not going to help you at all. Have you gotten any help?
Well, luckily back in when this first happened in March and April, the government did come out with some packages, stimulus packages, and we applied for loans, and we did receive them. There's still uncertain enough if we have to pay that back or not. And we're talking large dollars here to keep us going, but that can't last forever, and the money is running out. So we hope the government comes out with another package soon. But again, there is a worry there, and I feel really, really bad for smaller theater chains than ours, or even more independent theaters that have this one. They don't have a company helping them with any of this. And XXI has been very helpful, of course, that we're all one family. So I do think the government, by saying you can't run your business and somehow you got to survive, I think it's a tragedy, really. They need to do more.
How do you feel about it, Jeff Goldman?
The government needs to step it up right now. And NATO, the National Alliance of Theater Owners, which is the largest representation of theater owners in the United States, has got some legislation with the legislators for this new round of stimulus. Save Our Cinemas is the specific portion of it, and hopefully it gets included. They've been lobbying, and anything anyone can do to call your local congressman to Save Our Cinemas would definitely help.
All right. Let me get some more feedback here. Oh, the great Linda Maroney sending us a note. And we all know Linda is a filmmaker and a film programmer and, of course, has been working with The Little for years. Linda says, there's nothing quite like the experience of sitting in a dark theater with strangers watching a movie. And our friend Jackie McGriff responds, that's all I want for Christmas. Yeah, we're with you. Linda and Jackie, we are with you. I understand. I definitely feel that. But let me also read a note from Mark. Let me pull this up. Mark says, Evan, very interesting data on the lack of viral spread in movie theaters, but I tend to think it's because movie theaters tend to not be crowded during this pandemic, and people are, in fact, keeping quiet. When people are laughing or shouting or responding to a movie, that would make me more nervous. So I have to say that in a dark theater, I would be nervous to even laugh. I'd want to keep my mouth shut behind my mask, and that doesn't feel like the full experience quite yet. That's from Mark. Yeah, absolutely, Mark. I understand that. I think that's fair. I love being in a theater that is raucous and laughing and responding and sometimes crying together. I mean, frankly, being at the Little for Jojo Rabbit was all of those things, and it was an amazing experience to do it communally. And I take that point, Mark. You know, talking is a way to spread the virus. Singing is a way to spread the virus. Laughter out loud is probably a way to spread it if you are COVID infected. So I take that point. But again, I think we're moving in a better direction now. I think we're not that far away, and I certainly appreciate the points here. Paul writes saying, listening to Evan and guests advocating the opening for theaters during the pandemic, quoting data says, we don't see outbreaks does not mean sitting indoors for hours with 25 to 40 people you don't know, masks off while eating, isn't as risky in theaters as elsewhere. No, Paul, absolutely. Like, I'm not sitting here saying you cannot get infected if you go to a movie, and I'm not saying that there's been no infections in a movie. I'm saying that journalists and sociologists and data collectors like Zeynep Tufekci are pointing out that there have not been any traceable outbreak events pointing back to a movie theater. That doesn't mean there hasn't been any ever or there's been no infection, but the conclusion is that there are other types of gathering events that are much more likely to spread it, and that we just haven't seen that in theaters. Again, doesn't mean it's impossible, and doesn't mean that I don't respect the risk. I certainly do, and I appreciate that point. Adam Lubito, do you think that there is a concern raised in the Atlantic Monthly that once you start convincing movie lovers that they should stream new releases, that on Christmas they can stream Wonder Woman, that next year they can stream whatever they want to stream from Warner Media the day it comes out. Once you convince them that that is the norm, that even after this pandemic is totally forgotten, people are not going to want to pay for a movie ticket or leave their house. They're going to say, no, that's how I watch movies. Release it on streaming platforms the day you release it. That's what we do now. Are you worried that will become permanent, Adam?
I mean, a little bit. I feel like with no question, there's going to be a certain percentage of people, you know, casual viewers who are just going to be like, well, it's more convenient to, you know, sit in my living room and watch this. But I don't think the theater experience is going to go away, because I think there's still going to be the people that crave that communal experience, because it's so different. And I think this is just going to mean a shift in the way theaters operate, because I feel like even before the pandemic, you know, things haven't been great for theaters, and they've been reluctant to evolve. And I think this is going to kind of force their hand, and they'll find different ways to attract an audience. And how they figure out a way to do that, I guess, will be determined by these next few months and how streaming goes. But I also think it's going to come down to I think independent theater is kind of like the little cinema, even the Dryden locally, are going to be in a better position to come back. And I think that's going to come down to more thoughtful, deliberate programming and reaching audiences that, I mean, we've complained for years about how the Hollywood system hasn't catered to a lot of diverse audiences. I think things like when you see the success of things like Black Panther and Hidden Figures, and everyone goes, this is such a surprise. And I think that's because those audiences haven't gotten movies from the Hollywood system. I think that leaves the door open for independent theaters to cater to those audiences. And I think that's going to be a big part of how they bring people back.
What do you think, Derek?
No, I agree totally. I think there is an opportunity here for the little and the local smaller theaters to evolve and do things more creatively, where we might have had some hands tied for various reasons that could go on a long research paper. But for the future, I think there is going to be opportunities for us to capitalize on some of these maybe new restrictions. Meaning for us, we built a stage to have music, to have some different forms of entertainment. Mm-hmm. I think that was the right way to go. And we just have to have it. We just have to be open to do it, though.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, certainly there, you know, there will be some people who, whenever they sort of feel safe enough or are vaccinated or are feeling like things have turned a corner, that they're going to go out to eat and they're going to go see a movie in a theater. And the question is it going to be a one-off and sort of a little bit of a release, and then we're going to go back to this new routine? Or are we going to kind of get back out in public more often with each other? And I want to ask all three of you if you see a generational component to this. And by that, I mean, you know, Jeff, you talk about you can't get into streaming most movies and that kind of thing. You get distracted and you want to be in the theater and you want to have that experience. And, you know, I'm not asking anyone their age, but I think if we had only 23-year-olds on this panel, there may be a different disposition to it. I could be wrong. What do you think, Jeff?
My daughter has to go on a date still. You know, the gentleman has to take her out of the house. Post-COVID, once we get a vaccine, it's not going to work where the guy just comes over the house and hangs out with me. He's going to have to take my daughter out.
What year is this?
To go to the movies.
This is fascinating. I want to hang out with the Goldman family. I feel like I'm traveling back in time, the courting standards here. Okay, so you're saying that even the youngs are going to be back in the theaters?
I think they're going to be the first demographic back. They're going to be coming back to the theater in droves when it's the film product is there, because we're driven by product. If we don't have any good product to play, nobody comes. That's what's shown over the pandemic. You don't have good product, nobody comes. Product brings people in. Now, we're a little afraid right now, and it's COVID. People aren't coming for that. But post-COVID, post-vaccine, it's product that'll drive the theaters. And as long as we have great product, people will come back, I feel.
Okay, Derek?
No, I agree. It's all about the product. I do think that Jeff is correct that maybe the under 30 set will be the first ones back. It just, when we were younger, we were more fearless. It's just the way it is. I mean, you know, like we all like to criticize the youth of today for doing what they're doing, but we would have been them. Let's not forget about that. So I think they'll be the first ones to come back, and slowly our demographic was just skew older, which I love them, and they will eventually come back.
No, I was invincible once too, and it's hard when you wake up one day and realize that you are now invincible. But Derek, I think the broader question is just on whether younger adults are going to be more sort of adept with technology, used to streaming, and will, you know, maybe not necessarily even feel like I can go out during the pandemic, but I mean post pandemic, I mean well beyond. Are they going to be so used to the streaming services that that there's trouble for theaters generationally? You don't seem to see a split as much there.
No, I'm sorry, I forgot to answer that part of the question. Yes, I do think there's a sense that the people under the age of 30, I keep throwing that out there, do like the fact of the immediacy of streaming, the technology driven. They were brought up with cell phones, brought up with Netflix and other forms of platforms. But I do still think that they enjoy going out with friends and seeing movies on the big screen. You're right, though. There is a smidgen of me that says that some of them are going to be satisfied in their homes. And I think that's a loss for the art form of movies. I mean, I feel that there is a danger that if they get used to it sitting home, that, man, they just lose out on the experience and the art, the true love of film. It's sad, but there's a smidgen of me that thinks that some people will go that route.
And Adam Lubito, is there a generational divide here?
I think there is a little bit, but I would go back to what I was saying about theaters, you know, shifting what they're showing, and I think finding things that will bring in those younger audiences, and I think that means kind of getting away from, you know, the patterns they've established already, and mixing up the variety and the diversity of the films that they're screening that will attract different kinds of audiences and younger audiences. And I think that's what it's going to come down to. I think that will bring people back. If there's, as kind of what they've been saying, that if there's something they want to see, they will come and see it.
Well, 20 seconds apiece here, Adam. What do you want to see next, whether it's in the theater or not? Hopefully in the theater. What are you looking forward to?
I feel like I'm now a hypocrite. I'm saying I'm looking forward to Wonder Woman.
Yeah, that's okay, man.
But I feel like that's next on my list.
Okay. Jeff Goldman.
It's
Wonder Woman. I hate to say it, but it's Wonder Woman.
Oh, everybody loves Wonder Woman. That's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. Derek?
Oh, we were supposed to, for once, we were going to carry a larger film this Christmas, and it was going to be Dune, because I love the books. I love the David Lynch version. I love the documentary. And I was really looking forward to the production and direction of the new Dune remake. I'm sad that I have to wait.
Well, Derek, you know the affection that we all have working together and for The Little and the whole team there, and for all independent theaters, not just The Little, and frankly for everyone across the industry. But thank you, Derek Reese, General Manager and Film Programmer for The Little Theater. We hope you can hang in there. We hope you get support from the community and perhaps the government, and we'll see. But thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having us.
Jeff Goldman of Many Theaters Bookings, thanks for saying yes, and really, Jeff, one of the more interesting conversations. You got to come back sometime.
I dig talking to you.
Thank you, sir. That was a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Jeff Goldman, he says his job sucks, but it's important anyway. Adam Lubitow, film critic for City News, thanks for making time, and here's to seeing much more in the theater in 2021, my friend.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And Megan Mack has been the producer and engineer of Connections today. I'm Evan Dawson. Thanks for listening, and we're back with you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.